in public, and after that, 29 so on, a lot of people learned how to fly. In South Dakota, there was a deaf lady who took flying lessons. And after about 13 hours of practice, she soloed and got her license to fly. And her father gave her a biplane with the two double wings. And she would tour around the country, fairs, to demonstrating flying, you know, upside down, all that, and offer rides to people who were brave enough to go up. And she would charge children 50 cents and adults a dollar to fly. She called her plane Pard, P-A-R-D, in honor of her father, because her father was her partner. And she joined a woman's flying club that had another member named Amelia Earhart.
Thank you. That's interesting.
The deaf woman's name was Nellie Wilhite. Wilhite. She's still living today, and I think she was the first woman in South Dakota to learn to fly, and I think she was the first deaf person in the world. She got her license in 1928.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the audience now at this point? Remember, you can raise your hand and holler any time. We started out this workshop talking about creativity in the deaf community, inventiveness. Now, the deaf community has had a number of famous artists. Jack Gannon's book has a whole chapter on them, well illustrated. And Debbie Sonnenstrahl has one of my favorite stories about an artist who was also very inventive in a lot of other ways. I wonder if you would tell about him.
Sure. Since I love art, naturally one of my favorite stories involves a deaf artist. His name was Cadwallader Washburn. He was not born deaf, but he lost his hearing at the age of five years old. Once he lost his hearing at five, he never spoke again, turned his voice off, and used sign language for the rest of his life. He was born in Maine, but he moved to Minnesota when he was very young. And he went to Gallaudet College, too. It never failed to amaze me how his mind worked. In fact, he did so wonderfully during his college days that when he gave his graduation speech to an audience of all people from different education areas, even the superintendent of the D.C. school system was in this audience, and he heard their his speech. Guess what the name of his speech was? I can't give the exact name because it was written in a Latin medical word, but in everyday language, it was called The Working Mind of a Spider. And it went over so well that after his speech, the superintendent of the D.C. school system came to him and asked him for his permission to use his speech, publish his speech in a book for fifth and sixth graders for the public school system in D.C. But that's not the end of the story. He went on to become a famous artist, and he became an etcher. You know what an etcher is? Drawing on metal, block of copper and so on, engraving and then painting it with ink and then making many prints from that. And his prints are in museums all over the country, British Museum, the Met, here in Washington, D.C., and all over the world. But before he could become, get recognition as an artist, he had to earn his bread, earn his trade. So guess what he became? He became a newspaper reporter. Imagine that. He refused to talk, but he refused to let his deafness stop him. And he traveled all over the world, and one day he found himself in Mexico. During that time, there was the Spanish Civil War going on. It was bombing, fighting, shooting, all going around him. Washburn thought a minute. He felt that he should interview the dictator, or president of Mexico at that time, and find out what were his dreams, what did he want for his people, for his country. So Washburn found out where his headquarters were, went there, and went into the room, and it was just filled, packed with people. Naturally, Washburn was not the only reporter who wanted to see him. Everyone wanted to see him. So he looked around, all the people ahead of him, and he knew that it was worthless waiting. So take a look and left the room. He went out. You think he gave up? No way. He went to a store, and guess what he bought? He bought himself a black coat with long tails and a long, tall black hat, top hat, and white gloves, and a black cane with a white top. And the last thing he bought himself was a white pair of spats. You know what spats are? The covering. I didn't know what that was myself. I had to look it up. Covers on the shoe. So anyway, he went back to the headquarters, entered the room, and everyone's eyes riveted on him. Looked at him up and down. Who is that man? Who is that distinguished man? And they everybody said, well, I don't know. Nobody seemed to know. And the receptionist looked up. And before she could ask him any questions, she ran to the president's private office and told him, there's someone out there. I don't know who it is, but he looks very important. He said, what should I do with him? And the president said, really, really? Give him 5 minutes. Come, tell him to come in. The lady said, all right, Mr. President. And she went out. And Washburn did not have to say one word, not one word. The woman came up to him and said, you may come in. Washburn just nodded, bowed very slightly, and walked into the office. Met the president eye to eye. Both took a look at each other. The men sized each other up. And the president said, have a seat. And Washburn nodded, sat down, opened his jacket, and took out his faithful paper and pencil. And he wrote his questions in such fluent Spanish that the president was impressed. Why are you writing? And Washburn had to confess his deafness. You're deaf, but you write better Spanish than my own people? Thank you, he said. Gracias, the Spanish word for thank you, anyway. The interview took place for 1 hour, and the president told him all of his dreams and hopes for his country. And at the end, they shook hands, and Washburn left and quickly sent that interview to a Chicago newspaper. That time he was working for Chicago newspaper, and that was the biggest scoop of the year. And 3 weeks later, that president, the dictator, was killed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm. We're talking about legends in the deaf community. For those of you who've just come in, and for those of you who are here, do you have any questions you'd like to ask? Floor is open for questions or for stories. Questions? Yes.
How many years did it take for you to write the book on deaf heritage?
Almost 4 years working part-time.
There's one about Deaf Smith.
Fine.
Okay. A woman, always picking on the character. Well, really, he was a deaf man who lived in Texas. I don't want to go through the whole history. It might be boring, but I'll try to make it look exciting. I remember when I was a little kid growing up in Texas and at the residential school, the teacher took us to Texas legislature, the Senate. It's very nice, but almost the same design as our capital, United States Capitol, and went into the Senate's office and saw Sam Houston with one leg in a cast under a huge oak tree, and all the soldiers, assistants, were watching Santa Anna, who was the defeated Mexican general who lost the war against Texas in the independence. We saw one man under the picture in the tree listening, and he did it like that. He was acting like that. And of course, we really identify ourselves with him. He's a deaf man in that picture, and his name we found was Deaf Smith. And I understand there's a county in Texas named after him. We asked what his specialty was, and he was assistant to the captain and also chief scout. Chief scout with a hearing impairment, you know, he'd have to know exactly where the places were, where the enemies were. So that was our hero in Texas.
Thank you.
Did you know also that it was a $5 bill has his picture on it? The $5 bill? Well, the Republic of Texas $5 bill has his picture on it. The only deaf person I know of who has his picture on currency.
Yes.
I know it's my friends. I would like to add another laurel to Texas Brags. You'll find in the Guinness Book of World Records a deaf man named Leroy Colombo, who saved almost 1,000 lives as a lifeguard in Galveston, Texas. The state legislature voted to have a minute of quiet respect for him. Colombo is his name, Leroy. Also, you were talking about spats. At the School for the Deaf in New York City, the first thing I noticed about spats was was a coach of a deaf deaf coach. He went to the games wearing spats with a tie and a jacket. He would tell it be directing his team. Nowadays, coaches take them off. Not only that, ties off and a lot rougher with their voice.
Thank you for sharing that. I wish that we could go on and on and on, but we can't, because we have another program coming into this tent. So if you want to discuss these things with our participants, please stay around and do that after the program. We will be having a sign language class, introductory sign language class, in this tent right after this. And then after that, we'll have another discussion workshop with these people. Let's thank them very much.
Oh, we have a man named Sandy Ewan? Ewan? His father and Doc that we talked about yesterday and another deaf man photographer went up to the Washington Monument in 1930s on the outside, not on the inside. At that time they were cleaning it and his father was, grandfather was foreman. Took them up the scaffold to the top.
And if you want even more of that and a picture,
John.
Excuse me. If you would like to know even more about that and see a picture of that event, you can go over to our craft sales tent, and we may have a few copies of Jack's book left. You'll find the picture. I don't remember the page. Okay. I'd like to make a couple of announcements. For our deaf visitors, we'd love to have you share your stories with us. If you could go over to our other tent, we have a videotape crew from Gallaudet College. They're working to make a collection of stories by deaf people, life stories, jokes, anecdotes for the Gallaudet archives, and we'd be glad to interview you over there at any time. Also, we will be having a volunteer interpreter for the deaf blind at this festival during the next 3 days, if you have any friends who would like to take advantage of that service. So please, if you have a deaf blind friend, tell me, tell one of our staff, and we'll get that interpreter here for him. Okay, thank you all very much. Introduce your sign language teacher today. Her name is Elaine Aiello, and she's a professional teacher of sign language in the Washington area. She's interpreting for me now, and she's also reading my lips so that she can interpret for me. She's not going to use her voice yet. In the beginning of the class, she's going to be quiet, and that's so that you will get used to using your eyes, because your eyes are very, very important if you're going to get used to using sign language. After her introduction, she's going to use her voice and explain a little bit about American Sign Language and what it's like. And then after that, you're going to get involved, and she's going to teach you a few warm-up exercises in nonverbal communication. And after that, she'll teach you some basic signs so that by... It's a bad thing. So that by the time you leave here, you'll have enough sign language so that you can communicate a little bit, you can begin to communicate with some of our participants here, with deaf people you might meet on the job, or in the bus, or wherever you might be. Afterwards, we'll hand out some information about sign language classes in the area, and some calendars that were donated to us by the National Association of the Deaf, that have on every page a lot of history of the deaf in America, and I think you'll enjoy that. Okay, I'm going to leave it to Elaine now. Watch her carefully, okay? Workshop in the Festival of American Folklife. You're in the deaf community area, if you hadn't guessed from the flying fingers. And our topic this afternoon in our last workshop of the day is going to be being deaf in a hearing world. Our participants are going to share some stories with you and some of their experiences, and we would love to have members of the audience also share experiences and stories if they're deaf, or ask questions if they're hearing. It's a wide open panel for everybody to enjoy. I'm going to begin by asking each of our participants to introduce himself, tell you a little bit about where he's from, what his job is when he's not at the Folklife Festival. And we have a very special guest today who's agreed to join us also. She'll introduce herself too. Let's begin with Jack Gannon on the end. Would you introduce yourself and tell your name?
My name is Jack Gannon. I live in Silver Spring, Maryland. I work at Gallaudet College. I am the director of the alumni and public relations at Gallaudet College. My name is Bill Ennis. I live in Greenbelt, Maryland. I work right over there at the USDA, working as a programmer. My name is Nathie Kuthin. I live in Riverdale, Maryland. I work at Kendall School as a teacher of home economics. Hi, my name is Debbie Sonnenstrahl, and I live near here. Can't keep me away from the Smithsonian, and I work for Gallaudet College as a director of fine arts in education.
Thank you very much. I wonder if we could start things off today by sharing some stories about what it's like to grow up deaf. Some experiences from your childhood that you might like to share with other people.
Okay. I remember when the last time I could hear was about 4.5 or 5, somewhere in that area. I was sitting watching TV with my brother, and we were teasing each other, pushing each other around, and then all of a sudden, couldn't hear. The next thing I remember was I was in the hospital, in the bed, woke up from a long, deep coma, and I looked around, and there was a mirror all down one wall, and there were chairs. There was a chair over there. The rest of it, there wasn't anything there. Then suddenly, I was really suffering. I had to go to the bathroom. What was I going to do? So I hollered. And hollered some more. I thought, nothing's coming out. So I screamed. Screamed again. And finally, a woman came walking in. And I looked at her. I don't know her. I couldn't hear myself. I wonder if my voice was working. She said, "What can I do for you?" I said, the next thing I remember was in my parents' bed, and I was asleep again, and I woke up, and I saw a big banner saying, "We love you, Nathie. Welcome home." And my brother was there, my sister, and all these different aunt, uncles, cousins, family were all around. Everybody was talking, laughing, and I was looking at all of them. And I began to cry because I realized I was deaf. It wasn't that my voice was broke.
Thank you. Jack, you also became deaf after you lived for a little while. Could you tell us what that was like?
Yes, I was 8. Yes. I became deaf when I was 8 years old. I had spinal meningitis. I didn't know it until much later. As I recall, I went home after staying in the hospital, and one day the ice cream man passed, and I asked my mother if I could go buy some ice cream. Sure, she gave me some money. I went out and ordered and got what I wanted. I said, "Hey, Mom, the ice cream man talked to me, and I didn't hear him. Jack, don't you remember? You're deaf." I had not remembered that. All right. Thank you. I don't really remember anything about being born. I was born deaf. My parents didn't know anything about deafness, really. A friend told them, I feel pretty sure that boy's deaf. My parents were resistant and doubted that I would think I must have been around two and a half. And they thought I was just ignoring them, that I didn't pay attention to the parents. You know how that's a problem with children. They did find out, sure enough, I was deaf. Went to a school for the deaf when I was three. At that time, the late 1940s, and people had not thinking about sending people to school at that early of an age, but I was sent that early. I had to stay at a live in a dormitory at school. When I'd come home, my parents were coming, and I could not really remember or recognize them. I had stayed so long at the school. But finally, my parents decided to move to Austin, Texas, live in the same town where I could go to the residential school. And maybe it was only just a few blocks. I can't really remember it because it was very close. When I go to school, I thought, oh, now my parents are going to do this to me again. I don't want to go to school and live in the dorm with all those boys all lined up in those beds in a row, row after row. I could remember that. And my mom said, no, 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 that's not. You're going to come home this afternoon after school. I went up to the long stairways. I remember kicking and fighting. When I got to the door, I put both feet on each side, and I didn't want to go in. My mother finally got me in. After that, I realized that, well, I just live right off campus. I can just walk right back and forth. I was like a day student. I was a day student until I was about 15. I guess that's enough for that story, telling the rest of my life, huh?
Good lives. Debbie, would you like to share the story about the day you walked to school by yourself? That's my favorite.
Oh, I was going to say something else.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Later on.
Well, I'll tell that later, okay? All right, thank you. I want to share this story with you. I was born deaf and came from a large hearing family. My family consisted of my mom, my dad, my grandmother, my grandfather, my great aunt, and my brother, and all of them were hearing. I was the only deaf member. My father didn't know how to cope with my deafness. He was a baby doctor himself. He was a pediatrician, but yet he still didn't know how to cope with me. And he wrote a letter to John Tracy Clinic, which advocated oralism. And they told him to talk to the child, which all the family did. And I grew up without knowing one word of signs. And I started my school in education in oral school for the deaf, then went to a public school in seventh grade, graduated there at 12th grade. Now I want to tell you my experience is how I entered into the deaf world. It's really a different experience, like the difference between day and night. I remember it very well. My girlfriend from an oral school, a day program, said, Debbie, you're deaf. You belong to the deaf world. I'm going to show you where you really belong. And she took me to a deaf an affair. And the first time I saw all these hands flying, the flying fingers, I wasn't used to it. And then my parents said, I think it'd be a good idea for us to visit Gallaudet College. It's a college for deaf students. I said, Gallaudet? Gallaudet? Deaf college? Me? No way. I'm going to a hearing girls' college, Gloucester in Baltimore. I remember I'd taken the test and I was ready for that college, but my parents, they really loved me, and sometimes I think they were overprotective, but they loved me and wanted me to be happy, be able to stand on my own two feet. I did well in the hearing school, but still, my social life was so-so. All right? Now, I went to Gallaudet College for an interview, and the first man I met there was Dr. Phillips, you know, our dean of students there at that time. And he told me this story. Only 3 years ago, I graduated from Gallaudet in 1958. Now imagine this. He told me this story that 3 years ago he said to me, Debbie, I remember your father very well. I said, what? You remember my father after so many years? And what's more, my father has been dead since 1962. You remember my father? How? Why? You meet so many parents. He said, with you. it was a different case, because over the many years as a dean, I had to work on the hearing parents to allow their deaf child to go into Gallaudet College. But with me, he had to work on the child, on me, to make me to come to the deaf college. I said, wow, that's really a reverse for him. You know what happened to me? I entered the Gallaudet College, and I had to take two aspirins every night. You know why? I wasn't used to seeing all those hands flying fingers every night, but now it's part of me.
Thank you. Matthew, do you have one?
I remember the time when my mother took me to the deaf school in Pittsburgh, Western Pennsylvania School for the Deaf. After mother had found out that I was actually deaf, she asked around, where's the deaf school? And she took me over to the Pittsburgh school. I entered the school and all these big white columns and WSPD, Western Pennsylvania School for the Deaf, BMB, I remember all that. I thought, oh, impressive. I went in, and Dr. Craig, our superintendent, looked just like Hitler, the way his hair was fixed. I thought, oh, no. I was a little boy. He's a big guy. I mean, a little girl, and he was a real big guy. And the mother kept, you know, encouraging me in, and I kept kind of backing up. And he told my mother, go ahead and take me over to the girls' dorm and let me play at the playroom. I went with my mother over there. Saw the girls waving everywhere, and I couldn't quite figure all that out. My mother, I was hanging on to her. My mother kept kind of encouraging me along until one girl had a ball. I said, here, you want to play? Come here. Held the ball out, and I looked, and my mother says, yeah, go on, go on. I thought, oh, me? A ball? Bounced the ball? So, okay. So I tiptoed over, and I got the ball, and I started bouncing it, playing with it, bouncing it. Mama had disappeared, was gone. My mother had left me here all alone with all these strange hand-waving animals. But after a while, I became good friends with one of the girls. And then later, finally, I learned how to sign. You remember, this was in Pennsylvania. The Pittsburgh school did not have very many blacks there. I was like the only one of four black little children that I remember. I don't know about the big ones. There were four little ones of us. And one of the new girls came over and said, look, you're dirty, you're dirty. You never bathe. I said, I bathe every day. No, look, you're dirty, look at you. I said, I bathe every day. No, you're dirty. So then she pulled me to the bathroom. Oh, no, no. Took me into the restroom. Got the paper towel down, a little Ajax, got some water, put the Ajax and started scrubbing. I was hollering, no, she scrubbed and scrubbed. And then she washed water on it and looked and said, oh, it's not dirty. Oh, not dirty. I said, no, I told you I'm not dirty. She said, all right, we're friends. And took me on. And to this day, we're still talking about that experience. Children are mean. I guess, as most of you know, there's three reasons why people become deaf: illness, accident, and sometimes heredity. Maybe you'd be interested to know that some of the causes of deafness listed in old annuals of school reports a long time ago. First, you must remember a long time ago, you did not have many doctors. So often, the parents themselves determined how the child became deaf. And when they took the child to the school, they would say, the administrator would put down, that must be it. Some are a little strange. Let me share some of them with you. Some of the causes that I found in these old annual reports were black tongue caused the deafness, sore eyes, sprains. Didn't say where. Maybe they sprained an ankle and then became deaf. I don't know. Cold water. Fright. Thunder. Thunder, it's funny, but I found real cases, a deaf man who really did become deaf from thunder. He was standing on the family porch, and lightning came down and went out like she did, and after a long coma, he found out he was deaf. But this is the best of all. Mother's conduct. Mother's conduct. Behavior. Others, swallowing tobacco caused the deafness. Where my parents caught me smoking, they said I would never grow. And sure enough, I was a runt in my class. And I thought, boy, my mom was right. Then later, I finally began to grow. Sand, that's a story in itself. The story is about parents talking about a little boy, Johnny, and said, that Johnny, every time we tell him something, goes in one ear, out the other. The parents, you know what they were, as parents, you know what they're talking about, I'm sure. But anyway, Johnny's brother and sister overheard that. Looked at each other and said, really? So when their parents left, they said, hey, Johnny, come on, come here. And they took Johnny down to the creek. Found some very fine sand. Said, come here, Johnny, put your head down. Johnny put his head down, and they started pouring the sand. And looked, and nothing came, was coming through. And parents must have lied, they thought, huh? Okay, since my wife Glenda's here in the audience, and she told me that I need to add something. That's Glenda right there. And she said, let's see, I remember when what Mom said when I was sent to the school, Oklahoma School for the Deaf, when I was 3. Mother had a very hard time to let me go, you know, because I was so young, at such a young age, to send me to school. The superintendent used this example, said, come here to my mom and look through the window. A very beautiful girl, blonde hair, was 19 years old, was sitting under a tree and couldn't read or write just because her mom loved her too much. So my mom did send me. Also, I have a brother here in the audience who's now interpreting right there. That's John. You brought your own audience, did you, Jack says? Yes, I've got a daughter here, Bonnie Jo, right there. My son's somewhere running around. Okay. My cousin, they couldn't make it today, but anyway. let's see what I was going to tell you. Talking about John, remember, we're only 2 year difference in age. And Nadie's asking, are you the younger? No, I'm older, thank God, because when I wanted to do something like Little League baseball, I knew that I happened to be probably one of the best baseball players on the block, I thought, all these kids around. But when we put it into organized sport, I thought, oh, boy, I had to be under a coach and all the system and practice and so forth. I thought, well, I'll make my brother go, come along. He wasn't interested in going to play baseball. He didn't want to go over there. He didn't want to. I started twisting his arm. He didn't go. I was going to beat you up. So I made him go with me. Finally, my mom said, okay, and she took us both down to the tryouts. When I saw the kids, oh, there was a lot of them there. I saw one or two. I said, oh, yeah, there's a couple from my neighborhood. My little brother was really disgusted. He got was waiting for me to get out of the car, and all of a sudden, all that time, I decided I don't want to play baseball. I decided to use an excuse. I said, I'm deaf, Mom, and I don't know if I can get along with them out there. I'm not so sure if I could play that well. Changed my mind. I want to go home. Mom said, what? Wait a minute. Get out. You're going to go play baseball with your brother. Get out. No. Your brother can sign. Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know he can sign. But finally, my mother decided to just put her foot up and push me out of the car. I fell out of the car. And I said, and then she took off. I said, what? And I saw my brother standing there looking at me. And I said, oh, all right, I have to do something about this. Said, come on, let's go. So we started walking over there. And I really thank God that we did have a good time. We made the team and had a fantastic time there playing Little League.
Well, maybe it's a good time to start asking our audience if they have questions or experiences they want to share. Yes.
You know, it's to you.
Lady.
I'd like to know, I'd like to know if you, being black, if you have special problems being deaf.
Well, I consider myself deaf first, black is second, because I have a problem communicating in the first place. So I hang around with the deaf, not with the blacks, because being deaf, that makes me a deaf person. I'm in a deaf culture, in a deaf world. Black, I can't help that either. And you know that deaf are colorblind. You know that. So that doesn't matter. Doesn't make any difference to me. Jack says, thank you.
Are there any other questions?
I wonder if she finds...
She who, me? Oh, okay, that's nice of you, sweet.
If you find... Different worlds, black, hearing world. Oh, let me say, if she finds different worlds, a white world, black world, deaf black world, white, different worlds, or does she find the deaf is, it's all one world, not different white deaf world and black deaf world?
Well, let me get this straight. There's a deaf black, deaf white, and there is a difference, yes. First problem, I'm too educated for the deaf blacks. I'm too educated. And then in the white deaf, all right, since I grew up in the north in Pittsburgh, it hasn't really bothered me. You know, purple, green, white, brown, red does not make a difference. But if I have a negative attitude about those things, then yes, it would put me in trouble. But I don't have that kind of an attitude. I don't let those things bother me. And I mix with all deaf.
Bill.
Let me share something about that. Remember, I grew up in Texas, and I admit that I knew nothing about blacks. And when I grew up, I guess I was about maybe 16 years old. There's a deaf school that had dry cleaners vocational program. We had to learn how to operate the machines and that sort of stuff. And that happened to be broken down. So there was another deaf school for blacks in another side of town in Texas. And I had never known that it was there. So the deaf teacher took me and two other three to help him out, and we got in the car and we took all the clothes in a big pile and drove over there. I guess it was about 15 miles over, I don't know. Went in there, it was an older school, but it looked so neat. And I asked him, I said, why, if the deaf, you mean the deaf, they're just like us? Yeah, they're saying they're black, you're white. But I said, why is it different? He said, state law. So that's all I knew, because the state law, I didn't understand that. When I arrived and got out there, I saw a deaf person look at me, and he was a black boy, about my age, and he had a basketball under his arm. And we had something in common. I love basketball. And we walked up, and I started signing to him, but he looked at me, and he didn't understand. And I tried to talk. I said that his signing was completely different also. And the black sign had their own signing way, and we white deaf had our own way of signing. I pointed to the basketball, and he showed it to me. And then finally we began to use a lot of gestures instead of our signs and his signs. So we begin to play, and the teacher said, hey, get over here. I brought you here. What for? Get over here to work. Get start cleaning these clothes. And I said, I want to play basketball. And he says, nah, get over here. I said, and after that, he followed us over and started watching. We started getting each other's name, where you from, what town. We began to talk, and the teacher was really complaining about because I wasn't working. But really, I started getting to know him. And then a few years later, well, I went to New York and then down to Gallaudet, and then I was in a basketball tournament. I met him, and it was the same person. He was playing for a club, and we began to talk. Now we can talk, you know, whatever we want to, all as much as we want to. We had a real good talk.
Come on right up and share your story. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Gertha Krutz, and my sign name is this way. I'd like to share my experience. Happened to me? No. It happened to my oldest deaf brother. I have two deaf brothers and two hearing. I'm the baby of the family, and they all picked on me. I'm the only girl in the family. From what my mother's told me and how she recognized that I was deaf, my hearing brother, a little bit older than I, guess he's maybe was about five. My deaf brother was behind him at four. My parents never knew that he was really deaf. Always thought he was just stubborn. They'd always be calling after him. Every time they'd call him, my hearing brother would look, and that would make my deaf brother look, and they were each with each other all the time. Something happened that my older brother went away, and he was young. Deaf brother was all dressed up in Easter clothes and had his hat out playing. She kept hollering, you want some candy? You want some candy? Finally, it hit her that he's deaf. And it didn't bother my mother because she was familiar with deafness. We lived in a small town, small county. Many called it Snuff County. Really small little county. And in that county, I would say about 13 deaf lived in that area. I discussed it with my mother, and my mother discussed it with the doctor. Apparently, three of us became deaf from the fourth generation, every four generations. My mother, then her grandparents, then my great-granduncle, great-grandfather, another deaf. There were five, and there were four in that generation. Had all these distant cousins in a deaf family. Now, I have six children, all hearing, two grandchildren hearing, perhaps their children or their children's children, the fourth generation. It may not be from my family tree, but from my hearing brother or brother, they may have it. It may not be from my family tree. If so, then I would be very proud.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or experiences you all would like to share? Would you like to come up here and say a few words? If you'd prefer to stay there, that's fine. You can stand up right there. It's fine.